about our readings over this semester. Very often, Episcopalians and Lutherans both use this revised common lectionary, and it's a good thing, but it doesn't really fit an academic year. And so we've moved into something that's called the narrative lectionary, and the whole hope of the narrative lectionary is that we start kind of at the beginning of this narrative of that God is spinning out for us. And we start there, and we will go through the semester. So we'll be hearing a lot of Old Testament stuff in the beginning of this semester, but we will have texts that end up being preached on about Jesus near the end. So then the next semester continues, then we hear much more about Jesus. So just to give you a sense that rather than little snippets from a book as we go through it, we'll be hearing sort of larger bits of the story that hopefully we get to connect them all over the course of the semester. So today we start with the flood. I was very excited when I saw the appointment for this. It was creation. And I was like, Genesis. I'm like, yes, I get to preach on the creation story. And no, I don't. I get the flood. And I went, how's that creation? I have a very difficult relationship with the flood story. When I was my last year in seminary, and my wife was pregnant with our first, there is a danger for every pastor who has who's getting ready to have a child, and that is that you are going to be inundated with Noah's Ark crap. Just all of it. So I sent out the word, no Noah's Ark stuff at all. I had very interesting reactions, especially from like my mom. Why? It's a Bible story. And I go, yeah. I mean, I have two issues with Noah's Ark and the flood in general. Let's call one scientific, and let's call the other one precious moments or humanitarian. Either way. So the scientific one, challenging. My background is in physics, and I kind of go, this is very hard to reckon with the geological record that we have, and I don't really see a connection that the whole world was covered by a flood. But so there's that one side of the thing. But the other one, it really gets to the heart of it, and it's that the reality of the story is that God flooded the world and killed everybody but 8 people. That does not... The ark with the animals, I know, that's actually a really good commercial kind of thing. Look, it's a pair of animals going to the ark. Makes a nice little precious moments figurine with Noah standing on the deck with the rainbow kind of coming off. But you skip over that whole part about how humanity is wiped out. It's a challenge. There are some less than helpful ways to sort of resolve these issues and these problems. The first one is simply to dismiss it, which is really kind of probably what I was trying to do with the whole don't give us any Noah's Ark stuff because I don't want to think about the story. It's kind of dismissing it. I just put it over here and I don't have to deal with it. Then the other one is to swallow it literally, and that for me didn't work. So how do we... The other side of the issue then is I always viewed this story as a bit of a holy failure. God went and wiped everybody out. We had these 8 people, and guess what? It wasn't necessarily any better. Yeah, thanks, God. That's really helpful. I don't really want to deal with that. It's too much for omniscient, omnipotent, all... No, okay, well, how do we deal with this? So when I get to the scientific issues, that resolution, right? I am able to understand that I can have truth but not fact. I can resolve with that. I can wrestle with it this way. If I want to take this if I want to take this story seriously, if I want to take Scripture seriously, I have to wrestle with that. And for me, I come up with it's truth, not fact. We're going to talk about the actors and what it says about God, although I'm still not quite there yet about what does this say about God, right? And for us then to see what does it say about God, that helps me in a way resolve the humanitarian, the precious moments issue. How do we deal with all of these people dying? We have to look first at the larger narrative. We have to remember that the Bible is not just a bunch of isolated stories. Right? These come out of communities that are... they knit these stories together. They tell them over and over again, and then you begin to put them in order. And all of this isn't to say that they're sort of shortchanging the work of the Spirit, that we need to see the work of the Spirit precisely in these communities as they work them and they massage them and they put them together so they make sense about this is what we know about God. It's the work of the Holy Spirit. So we go back. Let's go back to creation. God creates a world for us, right? And the notion here is that creates everything that we need and everything is in harmony and in peace. And then the stupid humans rebel and they decide to sort of try to overthrow God and put themselves in God's place. That's the thrust of those, the creation and the fall that are there. And then, right, from that point, humanity gets sort of exiled into this broken world where relationships are broken, and it's not soon after that that suddenly we hear of Cain and Abel and we get murder, and then we get Lamech and the seven. I mean, just all of this stuff. It's this large downward spiral, and then we get to this point, which I will admit, Philip asked me, he's like, it seems like a weird place to start this story, like, and make the arc this way, right? We start at verse 11, right? We get to the point where God looks down and sees a world completely just wicked. That's the notion here. Everything that completely and utterly sort of almost irredeemable, but for Noah and his family. 8 people left in the world that God says, it's these people, they're going to be my seed, and we're going to set them over here, and then we'll wipe everybody out. Now, I can't make sort of a neat and tidy argument that makes God really look good, because there's still this whole notion that there's this sense of a divine genocide, that God wipes everybody out, and I'm still probably always going to wrestle with that. But the one side that's really good, I think, for us to think about is that it is, in fact, God who is acting and not just some run-of-the-mill tyrant, some despot who is out to create that environment. God finds the world overrun with wickedness, and so God acts. Those questions will always remain: what in the world was God doing? Why does God do this? And we will never know. Might not ever have a really satisfactory answer. But I think the scope of the story from the fall on with that large downward spiral is that humans were headed towards their own annihilation. And so, in our attempt to be God, we sealed our own fate. And without God's action, humanity would have perished. The notion is of a God who comes down and acts in the midst of human history, always seeking a reconciliation with humanity, even when we don't necessarily want it. A passionate God who pursues us, even when it seems like, to all intents and purposes, everyone has abandoned him. So we get the flood. And I think the other side of this, we look now at the larger text, the larger story, that's also look around at the time. What is the perspective that's going on, right? There are other cultures, and there are other cultures that have their same old flood stories. right? The Babylonians have them. Mesopotamia has them. We hear them of in Gilgamesh. You know, we hear these stories about floods. And in those situations, the flood, the gods are polytheistic. All of those cultures have polytheistic gods. And in all of those flood stories, the gods are at the mercy of nature. And they argue after the flood, like, what's going to happen? And they're in chaos themselves. So chaos is important. Because that's how Israel saw, when we talk about waters and the creation story, God moves over the waters. God moves over the chaos that exists. Jesus is on the boat in the Matthew reading, and they're afraid because they're on the waters and the winds and the waves. It's chaos, the destructive, annihilating power that comes and gets a hold of them. In those other flood stories that they tell, the hero of the story builds a boat. And I'm very clear, it's a boat. It has sails, it has a rudder, it has a tiller, and they're able to move it and sort of persevere and win victory as it goes. God tells Noah to build an ark. We talk about it as a boat, but it's basically a big floating piece of wood. There's no rudder, there's no tiller, there's no sails. In the midst of all of this narrative, what we hear is a God who remains firmly in control, who acts and is in control and steps into this story to save humanity and is always the one that's there. And God is able to harness the powers of chaos. They don't overwhelm him. God controls those chaos, does what he needs to do, and then pushes them back again. So this, by the way, so the ark God tells Noah to build, there's only another one place, the same word, it's linguistically connected to the story of Moses. When Moses gets placed in the basket, it's the same root word that we hear about the ark. And so think about putting the baby in the basket and shoving it down the river. This is the ark that exists, that God has them build. This is far from, as I would think, a holy failure. Even though the brokenness of the world doesn't go away because they get out of the ark, they get ready, and pretty soon, the broken relationship exists again. Noah and his sons have issues. But humanity is now saved for a new reality. God is in control and remains with his people. Pretty soon we'll see how that happens and how that comes about and how God does that. But in the ark is community, 8 people, 1 family, saved by God. And so the early church saw in this community, well, a community that's saved from chaos and destruction, they saw this church, a community that God calls into being. And the rainbow and the promise, following that water, they saw baptism. God saves us through water, that our old broken selves may die and that our new selves may be raised to new life. Not just raised to new life at the end, but here and now. Here and now, we get called to be signposts to that point to what God is doing. And so we know, in the midst of our world, that there are floods. There are literal floods that can really damage a lot of things. And there are, let's call them figurative floods, when it feels like the chaos is winning, that we are subject to them, that we cannot control them. I have a little flood right now, feeling a little chaotic and anxiety as we, as Philip and I enter into this new relationship. This worship service can be a little frightening. We don't complement each other perfectly, right? So this morning, as we're getting ready, as we're leading up to this day, I feel a little flood. Oh, okay. What are we going to do? All right, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. How do I know that? Because we're in the midst of the church. And so God gives us this ark, this church, to be present, that we might be open to what the Spirit is working in us. So it's a little flood, right? There are bigger floods, that depression, anxiety, death, illness, addiction. I would imagine some of you might have felt this if you are new students here, or even at the beginning of every new year, right? There's always sort of a sense of hope and excitement about going to school, but there's always that edge of, oh gosh, this is kind of nerve-wracking. What are we going to do? All right? In the midst of it all, we have this community, this ark, this thing that travels along, that is guided by God, that continues to point to the God who holds us in care. Led by the Spirit, washed in the waters of baptism, fed by Christ with his body and blood, gathered to speak words of mercy and peace and grace and forgiveness, so that we may not despair. Despair is that thing that gets us. And the church is there. There is a reason why many churches are built sort of in the inside to look like ship hulls. Not this one, but others look like ship hulls, especially in like Scandinavian countries. They get the sense. The church is the ship. That's why we call the area that the nave, as in navy. We get those connections here. This is the church. That there is a place that we may hear the words that control and have power over the floods of our lives. But that also means that we, as we are gathered here, we too get to be the ark. It's not just the thing, it's not just the building, it's what we are called to be. We get to be the ark. That means that God, whether it was wise or not, has brought us in and has in many ways given us power to push back against the powers of chaos, the stuff that breaks apart and annihilates. We can be the voice that tells the brokenness of the world to take a seat. It is not the ultimate power. All the stuff that divides and separates people apart from one another, apart from creation, apart from God, apart from even themselves. We just say, sit down. You're not in control. God is at work. And that's really why this is about creation. Because this is not something that God did and then stepped way back from. That God continues to be present in this world, revealing himself in many ways through this body. And everywhere that we see people working together to end brokenness, to heal, to bring life, we as the church, even if they're not in the church, can point to it and say, this is what God is doing. We can continue to testify to that God who is at work. The big things, we go out and have big, grand sort of feeding the homeless, going out, doing all these sorts of things that that oftentimes the society likes to see us do. Maybe. Can also be small things. The reality of seeing someone and acknowledging their existence. Not just saying, hey, how you doing? But to take a moment and see, oh, wow, you're doing that. That's really interesting. Or what does that mean? How does that, what's that do? How, a moment of sharing that can connect people, bringing together, bringing wholeness and peace. The takeaway, God acts. God acts in the world. God acts in the world through us. Called to be the ark that connects us. God acted before. God acts now. God still will act in the future. It's amazing. It's wonderful. I still don't want Noah's Ark stuff for my kids, because I end up with a house full of that. But this is also the good thing about having a lectionary, where we have assigned readings that come from outside of us, so I don't have to pick. And sometimes I really have to wrestle with the story that is laid before us. What does that look like? What does that mean? And I'm glad this week this was it. I'm glad this week was the flood story. Because I never really had to, oh yeah, flood. Okay, skip by it really quickly. I had to think about it this week. I'm glad I did. So I hear of the God who acts to save us, to be present with us, and calls us into that same work for the good of the world. Thanks be to God.